Welcome to Unpacking Peanuts, the podcast where three cartoonists take an in-depth look at the greatest comic strip of all time, Peanuts by Charles M. Schulz.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. This is Unpacking Peanuts and we're talking about 1963. I'm Jimmy Gownley. You might know me as your third favorite host of this podcast, but I'm also a cartoonist. I do a series of books called Amelia Rule and also a memoir called The Dumbest Idea Ever. And my latest book is Seven Good Reasons Not to Grow Up. Joining me, as always, are my pals, co-host, fellow cartoonists, and let's face it, the two you like better.
He's a playwright and a composer, both for the band Complicated People, as well as for this very podcast. He co-created the very first comic book price guide, was the original editor for Amelia Rules, and is the cartoonist behind Strange Attractors, Tangled River, and A Gathering of Spells, Mr. Michael Cohen.
Hey there.
And he's the executive producer and writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, a former vice president of Archie Comics, as well as the creator of the Instagram comic strip Sweetest Beasts, Harold Buchholz.
Hello.
So guys, we have a great year. We have about 23 or 24 strips still to get through for this year. So how about we just get right to it?
Sure.
Sounds good.
Hey, and if you're out there and you want to follow along, remember, you can just go to gocomics.com, type in Peanuts, search 1963, and we're going to be starting here right on May 5th. And you can follow along with us and look at all the beautiful art as well. In lieu of doing that, buy yourself those Fantagraphics books. Treat yourself. You deserve it. Anyway, here we go. May 5th. Frida is looking over the hedge at something. She says, "I knew it. Still sleeping." Then she crosses the hedge and says, "What a dog." And we see it is Snoopy on his doghouse that Frida is upset about. She yells at him, "All right, rise and shine." Snoopy thinks, "Oh, good grief." Frida continues, "You'll never find a better rabbit chasing day than this. The sun is shining. The meadows are green. The rabbits await." Snoopy is not into this at all. He thinks to himself, "I can't stand it." So Frida, though, points him off into the fields and says, "Don't come back until you have pursued your quota." Snoopy walks off. Then Frida talks to herself, saying, "The whole trouble with him is he's never developed his inborn abilities." She continues, "I think if he once saw a few rabbits, he'd realize what he's been missing. After all, the thrill of the chase is in his blood. And he..." Next panel, we see Snoopy leading a little bunny rabbit back home to his house and says, "This way, little friend." The strip ends with Snoopy on top of his doghouse and the rabbit asleep on top of Snoopy. Frida is not pleased.
Big smiles on the rabbit and Snoopy's face.
Frida still has two personality traits or shticks.
Naturally curly hair.
But she's become a pretty important character. And I'd be interested in seeing if Schulz gives her a little more complexity. Because right now she has naturally curly hair she's very proud of. And she's nagging Snoopy because he just lies around and does nothing.
Yeah, and I like the fact that there's no point to him chasing rabbits. He's not hunting rabbits. She just wants him to chase his quota. Like uh-huh. that there's no larger point other than get him moving.
I think Frida is all about things that are innate. So, you know, she has naturally curly hair.
Right.
Snoopy should be a bunny chaser.
He's a beagle. Yeah.
This is the first year he is officially identified as a beagle.
I think this is origin and first appearance of bunny, right? Is this it?
Yes.
Bunny. Bunny one.
Well, it's funny because this is clearly a cute bunny. It is not. I think if Schulz was going to develop this into a character to stick around, I think he would have made it less a cute bunny and more a bunny in the Snoopy style, if that makes any sense.
Or like a Woodstocky.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
But it's a really cute bunny.
It is a really cute bunny.
It is. It's adorable. Yeah, that last panel. Yeah, May 5th. Check it out online.
And I love Frida, actually. I think I love the look of her character. Really good.
It's a little nose.
It's great. And a middle moment of Peanuts history.
May 6th, Charlie Brown is perusing the local newspaper, apparently the sports page, and he says, "Oh, for five, good grief." He's talking to Lucy, and he says, "My favorite ball player went hitless yesterday and made three errors. When he suffers, I suffer." Lucy and Charlie Brown walk, and Lucy says to him, "You and my dad should get together. Every year for 25 years, my dad has been rooting for Sam Snead to win the National Open." Now, is this the first reference of Sam Snead?
No. I can't say that it is.
And as we need to point out once again, Sam Snead, very, very famous golfer and clearly a favorite of Schultz.
Yeah, who Schultz probably saw in person.
And before, this, but,
yeah, probably.
Even though he's unnamed, this, I believe, is the first Joe Slobotnik.
Joe Slobotnik, Charlie Brown's favorite baseball player. And the genius idea of this, other than being yet another great character that we never see, is that Charlie Brown's favorite baseball player is apparently terrible at baseball, at least at the professional or minor league level.
He can relate, yeah.
He can relate. May 14th, Lucy looks outraged, furious. Charlie Brown and Linus look on. Linus says to Charlie Brown, "Uh-oh, Lucy's got her mad face on. No matter what I say or do today, I'm going to get slugged." Linus walks off panel and says to Charlie Brown, "I might as well get it over with." Then, from off panel, we hear, "Slug!" Charlie Brown is shocked by this. Linus walks back, looking a little tousled, and says to Charlie Brown, "Now I have the rest of the day to myself."
Oh.
Yeah, that's very mature attitude. Get it over with. Get fast over, rather than worry about
mature
it.
Mature dysfunction, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, when Liz has her mad face on, I just gonna walk over and get slugged.
But a couple of months ago, he was running away from things that he didn't want to face.
That's true.
Well, that's true.
I guess some things, even in runism, are inevitable.
You can't run away from the mad face.
Yeah, no.
She is not looking happy there.
You know, the other thing about the Van Pelts this year, because I was once I said, I can't remember what strip we were talking about. I said, "Boy, I wonder what it's like in their house." And now seeing the episode of Linus freaking out about the honor roll and stuff like that, I was, you know, I know this is a stretch, but maybe Michael will back me up on this because I'm going out on a limb here. But we know Schultz loved the New Yorker because that was like one of his ideals of cartooning. Do you think he ever read like the Glass Family Stories by Salinger?
Oh my God. Right. But how does that relate to
because
Lucy?
They're neurotic people that are expected to be the best at what they're doing. And
oh, you mean Linus would definitely be a Glass character.
Right, but
Lucy, well, no.
All right.
I mean, I can't see Franny punching anybody.
Well, pre Franny and Zooey. All right. Anyway, just a thought. We'll put that on the old idea bin.
Well,
which, by the way, that's Michael's code for "I'm not doing that ever." Well, we'll put that in the old idea file. I just cross it off. May 24th, Frieda is talking to Snoopy. She says, "Now pretend we're out in the woods. You're following a trail, see?" Snoopy seems to be following along. Then she says, "Suddenly you spy a rabbit. What do you do?" Snoopy stands up on his hind legs and walks over, offering a pleasant, inviting handshake to the rabbit.
The imaginary rabbit. Yeah.
The imaginary rabbit, yes.
Such a great drawing of Snoopy. Little hail fellow, well met.
And a great little drawing of Frieda, kind of, not only is she looking frustrated, but sort of like leaning away from him, like, oh.
Yeah, it's like, 'twas ever thus.
June 10th, Sally is out playing in a sandbox. She says to herself, "My mother is watching me out of the window." She goes back to playing and says, "Mothers feel secure when they see a child of theirs playing in a sandbox." And Sally sighs, and then she says, "She's secure, and I'm bored to death."
Okay, all you kids out there in Podland, what is significant about this strip?
Well, I know what it is, but only because you mentioned it, I believe. I don't know that I would have noticed it.
Okay, I'm not absolutely sure I'm correct on this, but originally when I put together the hierarchy, which is now the tier list, the top four were the only ones who could appear alone in a strip. So there's been lots of Charlie Browns, lots of Snoopy's, lots of Linus, lots of Lucy's. This is the first time any of the lower tiered characters have a strip to themselves. which means that Sally might be a top tier character.
She certainly moves in that direction over the years, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a...
Yeah, there's never been a Violet or a Schroeder. We'll see. Keep an eye on it. But there's three this year with a solo Sally strips.
It also works for her because she's slightly outside the group because she's just the baby sister. So that's nice. Uh-huh.
Gives makes Schultz me think of arena. Of was it in High and Lois? Was it Trixie?
Yeah.
Often had these little monologues to herself.
I think you mentioned Trixie in another episode, and it never occurred to me, but boy, she is obviously influenced by Sally, even down to the little flips of hair.
I don't even know who came first.
Oh, that's true. I don't know. You know, it's funny. What I find about the hair, too, is just how wild Sally's hair actually is. This is like Rhonda from Amelia level. It was originally meant to be like a flip, like the Mary Tyler Moore flip, like a baby would have, you know, off the back. And now it's just giant Viking wings that come off the sides. I don't know why that works as a hairstyle for a kid, but she looks really cute with it.
But what does he do on a profile?
It flies off the back.
That'd be hard to draw a profile.
Well, he does it all the time. It's the same shape. It's just that you see one and it comes off the back of her head. It's the Mickey Mouse syndrome. June 30th, Lucy looks angry. She's also leaning against possibly the weirdest looking beanbag chair I've ever seen. Linus comes up and asks her, what's the matter? Lucy pensively looks out a window and says, my life is a drag. I'm completely fed up. I've never felt so low in my life. Linus says to her, when you're in a mood like this, you should try to think of things you have to be thankful for. In other words, count your blessings. Lucy rants, saying, ha, that's a good one. I could count my blessings on one finger. I've never had anything, and I never will have anything. Lucy continues, looking absolutely forlorn, and says, I don't get half the breaks that other people do. Nothing ever goes right for me. And you talk about counting blessings? You talk about being thankful? What do I have to be thankful for? Linus says, well, for one thing, you have a little brother who loves you. Linus looks at Lucy, who looks back. Then Lucy bursts into tears, gives Linus a hug, and Linus says, every now and then, I say the right thing.
I'm going to hand this over to Harold.
Yeah, this got to me as a little kid because I had a bigger sister and I thought, wow, that's amazing. That's an amazing moment. I want to have an amazing moment like that.
It's a beautiful strip,
but it never happened.
Never happened with you? Not even a couple weeks ago when your sister visited? No.
Well, I would never say what Linus said.
Well. I'm an only child, so I can only view from the outside and be grateful. July 1st, a dramatic sequence. Frieda and Charlie Brown walk out to Snoopy's doghouse. Snoopy is nowhere to be seen. Frieda says, Snoopy's in the hospital? Charlie Brown says to Frieda, uh-huh. Didn't you know? He's been there for about 4 days. Frieda says, is he allowed to have visitors? Charlie Brown says, oh, yes. He's had a few close friends drop by already. Panel 4, we see Snoopy in the hospital bed with a smile on his face being visited by two bunnies.
Cute bunnies.
Very cute bunnies.
Now, we've seen a lot of weird stuff in Peanuts, but the fact that a dog goes to a hospital with a TV and a hospital bed and they let bunnies in.
Okay, now where does...
That's one of the few times... The few times we've been out of the neighborhood,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Okay, so let me get to... I want to explore the mind of Michael. Now...
Oh, no, don't.
Does the hospital...
It's a dark labyrinth.
Well, I already know that. So I know my way around pretty well, actually, at this point. But my question is, do the bunnies and the hospital and Snoopy in the hospital and all that stuff, does that rub you in the same way Snoopy flying with his ears, or is this more acceptable?
No.
That doesn't that answer no, they that question.
Put a dog in a putting a dog in a bed is not as weird.
Oh, as got it.
Flying around as a helicopter with his ears.
Right. Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention something that's going on in Schultz's life at this point that makes this. It's a long sequence. It's almost 3 weeks long of dailies. So we find out this is July 1st, and there's a sad letter that Schultz wrote, the same letter where he was mentioning Craig's broken leg. He wrote in August 28th to Ruth and Marvin Forbes again, talking about his honorary degree. But he mentions that, that Marion died about 3 weeks ago after lingering far beyond the time given her. It was a very difficult experience for Buss, but he has come through it all quite well. And Buss was her husband, and they were living with the Schultzes in Sebastopol. Says, Buss is continuing to live here with us, and this helps him, for otherwise it could be lonesome. Our kids like him a lot, so it's good for us to have him around. So this whole time that Schultz was doing Snoopy in the hospital, he's enduring the loss of his second mother, you could say, in Marion. So I'm guessing he was processing some of those hospital visits through Snoopy being in the hospital.
Wow. You know, at the core of all of this, it's great that this is a wonderful work of art, and it's great that it's funny and all of that. It's also great, though, that at the core of it seems to be a decent guy, an actual decent human being who tried his best. Flawed as we all are. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody screws up. But it's just nice to know that, as Schultz felt things deeply, he had connections, family and friends that really mattered to him. And that may be all of talking about all of these strips. It doesn't matter. And the real reason that it resonates is just because of who he was. And that's what's special. Yep,
good old Charlie Schultz.
He's good old Charlie Schultz, you know? And that's an all right thing to be.
And even those, you know, the fact that he wrote so many letters, and we have so many stories of him writing letters to people. I mean, he was a correspondent. He would, if you sent him a letter, as big as he was, he would tend to send one back, and it was often personalized. And so when I think, you know, I see Charlie Brown writing his pen pal or his pencil pal, I think of Charles Schultz now.
You know, this is to be a little less sentimental. I made a tactical error as a child. In fourth grade, we had to learn how to write letters and address on. Maybe it wasn't fourth grade. Maybe it was earlier than that. Write letters and address envelopes and all that kind of stuff, right? And the way they did it was you would send a letter to your favorite celebrity. And then if anyone got a response back, then we'd put it up on the wall of the classroom. And I was torn between Charles Schultz and Willie Stargell, who was my favorite Pittsburgh Pirate at the time. And I went with Willie. And do you think Willie wrote back?
No.
So I'm still bitter. And then you hear he actually would send some kids original strips if they expressed interest in being a cartoonist and stuff. Like, I mean, a really generous person. But I thought, he'll never write back.
But it also kind of colors this when you see the stories of Lucy 2 months late writing back a thank you to Grandma for the Christmas present. Right. And you see Violet feeling guilty about the Valentine's card. It's like you get the impression that Schultz, you know, he expected correspondence to be, a back and forth thing. Mm-hmm. You should write that letter. That was the right thing to do.
And I'll tell you the other thing. The correspondence between him and his audience in a few years will have massive consequences for the strip and basically for comics in general. So it's another great thing that he was open to that sort of back and forth with his audience in a way that it was not like, I don't think he would have dug it on social media where it's just, you know, people just deliver their hot takes in 2 seconds. You know, you had to think about it to write someone a letter, you know, you had to write it by hand and put it in an envelope and mail it. It was a big thing.
It wasn't one of those, like those Ken Burns letters from the Civil War, but still they're good letters.
Oh, speaking of back and forth with our audience, actually, it's funny. During our little break, I came back early and Liz said, why don't you talk to our audience and ask them what to tell us what they think about the show? What do you like? What do you not like? Now, I will warn you this. If you tell me you don't like something, I will do it 5 times as much. But the other two and Liz are reasonable people. So if you have a thought about what you like about the show, or maybe you'd like to see us do something different or do something new, why don't you send us an email? You can send it through the unpackingpeanuts.com website, or you can check us out on social media at Unpack Peanuts on Instagram and Twitter. And send me your compliments and the others your suggestions. I'm very insecure. July 18th. Charlie Brown is outside. Lucy comes up to him and says, "Has Linus told you about the dangers of looking at the eclipse?" Charlie Brown says, "Yes, he's told me all about it," which he has in previous strips. Lucy says, "I'm heeding his warning. I don't want to do anything that might harm my beautiful eyes." "Do you think my eyes are beautiful, Charlie Brown?" Charlie Brown says, "Yes, they look like little round dots of India ink."
Meta.
That's definitely meta. And I have referenced this strip many, many times. It's always stuck out to me, but it jives with my personality and interests in art.
Yeah. And this whole solar eclipse thing goes on for quite a while. And the punchline is Lucy's walking out in the rain toward Linus, who's just standing there with his hair totally against his face, just drenched. Just like, so how's the eclipse?
Yeah, one thing I've said over a course of a few episodes is that sometimes he doesn't stick the landing on the long sequences. That one he sure does.
Yeah, you're not expecting.
No, just that all this buildup, we're going to look at the eclipse, we're not going to look at the eclipse, look at it this way, look at it on a pie plate, all this stuff, and then it's just raining the day of the eclipse. The eclipse is so funny.
And you don't even know what it's about until the final panel. And you don't need to have read any of the previous strips for that to be hilarious. Yeah,
brilliantly done. July 21st, Lucy is walking off holding a balloon. Snoopy follows her. Lucy then looks at the balloon and says to Snoopy, "I'm going in for lunch, Snoopy. Hold this for me. Whatever you do, don't let go of it." Then we have a few panels of Snoopy just diligently holding the balloon. Unfortunately, he falls asleep. Then he yawns and lets go of the balloon. Two panels later, he realizes what's happened. Then, in the last panel, it's night, and we see Snoopy running away from home with his belongings in a bag. What do you call those things? Those little, the old hobo sacks over his shoulder. And he says to himself, "Make one mistake, and you pay for it the rest of your life."
I like the touch of him walking the railroad tracks.
I don't think I've ever noticed the railroad
tracks. Now, do you think that still reads in present day that, I mean, because we grew up with that cliche of, if you're going to run away from home, you got to have a stick with a bag.
I think the reason someone might not get it because there are no polka dots.
Yeah, you got to have the polka dots. I don't know. Yeah, otherwise it's not an official running away if you don't have those elements.
That's a really good question. To our younger listeners, if you see someone holding a stick over their shoulder and having a little tied handkerchief that has stuff in it at the end of the stick behind your back, does that read as someone running away from home or a hobo? Is that something, you know, have you seen it enough? Is it still floating out there in the culture?
You know, it's weird because there's so much pop culture from the generation before us that still was in our generations, like the Looney Tunes stuff. And so it's wild to see some of these things that were, you like, how much anvil humor was around in the 30s and 40s. Like, everybody, you know what's hilarious? A friggin' anvil. And it's bizarre. And now you'd see it. I don't think anyone would, and no young person would necessarily know what an anvil is. I'm not sure I know what an anvil
is.
Well,
they know that if they know who Mal Evans is.
Oh, yes, that's true. If you watch The Beatles Get Back on Disney, you have seen an anvil. So, well, there you go.
It is amazing when I think about, you know, people who are into pop culture today, because it's so fragmented now, a lot of the references that are common are from our era. And so they have the burden of understanding their own fragmented culture where things are happening now, being created by people now their age. But they also have to kind of know almost a century's worth of stuff when mass culture was mass culture in America. And I'm amazed what some people know, that covers like a century of pop culture that, you know, half of it I've lived, and they're just like picking it up. It's amazing what has, you know, what some people know. It just blows my mind.
As long as it can be translated into a meme, I guess it can be passed on for generations yet to come. August 4th. Charlie Brown is fleeing Violet, who looks furious. And she says, "It's no use running. I'll get you," she says. Charlie Brown is now hiding behind a tree. She still chases him. He's running in the opposite direction. And she's yelling, "I'll get you, Charlie Brown. I'll get you. I'll knock your block off. I'll..." Charlie Brown stops and says, "Wait a minute. Hold everything. We can't carry on like this. We have no right to act this way." Violet stops. She actually seems to be considering this as Charlie Brown continues. "The world is filled with problems. People hurting other people. People not understanding other people. Now, if we, as children, can't solve what are relatively minor problems, how can we ever expect to..." Violet hits him right in the face. Charlie Brown is knocked on his butt, and Violet says to Patty, who apparently has witnessed this, and she says, "I had to hit him quick. He was beginning to make sense."
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely playing the adult here.
Yeah, this is just over and over again. He has these home run strips where some character is speaking wisdom. And one way or another, someone's responding. And these are really memorable strips for me.
Yeah. And I'm a little sad that poor little Patty doesn't have anything to say.
Could have given her a little exclamation point, word balloon, maybe a question mark.
Something, but she's just, she's been dumped. She's down at the bottom. She's in the basement.
Poor Patty.
Well, she needs a new agent.
September 2nd, Lucy is hanging out at Schroeder's piano. She leans over and says, "Why don't you ever call me cutie?" Schroeder says, "What?" Lucy says, "Why don't you ever come up to me and say, hi, cutie?" Schroeder says, "Because I don't think you're very cute." He goes back to playing the piano, and Lucy says, "I hate reasons." Yikes, Schroeder.
That's got to be the greatest punchline.
I hate reasons.
Yeah.
Well, it continues. September 5th, Charlie Brown says to Lucy, "You want someone to call you cutie? Ha, that's a laugh." Charlie Brown is ranting now. "You've never acted cute in your life. You're crabby, you're bossy, you're selfish, and you're inconsiderate. You're just about as uncute as a person can get." Charlie Brown walks off looking annoyed. Lucy looks after him, then says out loud, "I'm an uncutie."
In quotes.
Again, unnecessary quotations.
Do you feel sorry for Lucy?
I mean, has Charlie Brown ever been that specific toward his opinion of Lucy?
No.
That is, you know, Daily Strip. It's both barrels.
Yeah.
And it's harsh. Yeah. I feel for Lucy. I mean, we just saw her kind of being down in the dumps with Linus. Kind of the things that she tries to come across as is she's oblivious to all these things in life, and that she's queen and everything's fine. But, you know, she's revealing a side of herself that says, you know, I don't really feel that way. You know, it's a show, or at least a lot. Sometimes it's a show.
Yeah. And oftentimes that is the case when someone is bluster and it seems full of themselves. It comes from a place of insecurity.
Yeah. If you have a hard candy shell, you got a marshmallow.
You know, the other thing is all Charlie Brown and Schroeder are doing is exactly what Lucy does. What Lucy doesn't like is being treated the way Lucy treats others. So,
yeah, right. So
This is an interesting
learning. See, dishing, yes, comma,
exactly,
taking.
Exactly. He who liveth by the put down, dieth by the put down. September 14th, Snoopy is sitting atop his doghouse, and he is asleep. He's actually perched at the very edge of the doghouse, and he begins to lean forward as he sleeps. His word balloon, holding the Z, which indicates sleep, is also tilting. In the third panel, the word balloon actually falls from the sky and hits the ground, saying clunk. In the last panel, Snoopy bolts awake and not sure what has happened.
Is it a dream?
It is interesting because do you ever have that moment where you just bolt up from sleep for no particular reason? You're not sure what happened. This sort of evokes that.
Yeah, but it's a noise. It's the clunk that woke him up.
Makes me think of flying on a plane with Diane, and I'm snoring away, and she can't sleep on any travel, you know, and she's, and then and it's like, you know, you wake up and you're going,
oh, that's the word.
And the joke is the second I do that, I look around and point at her. whenever I wake up. That's now my reflex.
One of my superpowers is I can fall asleep on an airplane instantaneously. And once I was traveling across country to the great city of Los Angeles, and it was around the St. Patrick's Day. So I had my Irish music playlist going, but I accidentally had hit, loop on one song, and I fell asleep instantly, my earbud out of my ear. And I played Finnegan's Wake, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake, for 5.5 hours from one side of the continent to the other. The other person just looked at me like they wanted to kill me. I have no idea if it was because of that or because of some other reason. But I bet it was not lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake for that guy 5.5 hours later. September 22nd, Charlie Brown is walking outside. He looks upset. He says to himself, "I'm in sad shape." He walks up to the famous psychiatry booth. Lucy invites him over and says, "Good morning, sir. Sit right down." Charlie Brown says, "Fine. I was afraid I might need an appointment." The next panel, Lucy's listening as Charlie Brown says, "What can you do when you don't fit in? What can you do when life seems to be passing you by?" Lucy takes him away from the psychiatry booth and says, "Follow me. I want to show you something." They go out to a hill, looks very similar to the hill that they once were observing clouds on. And she says, "See the horizon over there? See how big this world is? See how much room there is for everybody? Have you ever seen any other worlds?" Charlie Brown says, "No." Lucy continues, "As far as you know, this is the only world there is, right?" Charlie Brown says, "Right." "There are no other worlds for you to live in, right?" Charlie Brown says, "Right." Lucy continues, "You were born to live in this world, right?" Charlie Brown says, "Right." Lucy turns to Charlie Brown and screams, "Well, live in it then," sending Charlie Brown flying. Then Lucy says, "$0.05, please."
That was well worth it.
This is a very famous one.
It's worth 5 cents.
Oh, that is worth 5 cents. That's good advice for 5 cents.
Yeah. This is the year of those long speeches where people are speaking their wisdom and moving into great insights.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing that he has the characters that can sort of do all this sort of thing too. It'd be like I said earlier, I really liked the strip Tiger by Bud Blake, but you know,
yeah,
Tiger by Bud Blake is not going to be visiting these sort of themes. Although it's time for a Bud Blake revival.
Yeah. He was the only one who had a crazier ball cap than Schultz.
Yes, that's true. Definitely something I would think about when I was trying to draw Pajama Man. So I never quite got it as successful as I.
Yeah. Although Winthrop's was kind of weird to come to think of it.
September 27th, Snoopy is lying atop of his doghouse at night. Suddenly he bolts awake and says, "Good grief, I'm doomed. I've forgotten my zip code number."
So this is maybe not so much of an obscurity because everybody knows a zip code, but might be interested to know that zip codes were introduced on July 1st, 1963.
I remember that day well.
So apparently this is a big deal to Charles Schultz as the correspondent. I don't know. All of a sudden he's got to remember to put his zip code number on every one of those letters he's sending.
There were PSAs about don't forget your zip code into the 70s.
Yeah, right. I remember those. Yeah,
very strange. Also, pointing out unnecessary quotation marks, always funny.
Zip code.
As we're going to see in the next strip, which is September 30th, Linus is talking to a new kid. He says, "Your name is what?" The new kid says, "My name is Five," with unnecessary quotation marks. Five continues, "My dad says we have so many numbers these days, we're all losing our identity." Five continues to Linus as Charlie Brown walks in from behind. Five says, "He's decided that everyone in our family should have a number instead of a name." Linus says to Charlie Brown, "Charlie Brown, I'd like to have you meet Five." Charlie Brown says, "Oh no."
First new character in a couple years. Little kid with a mohawk. Interesting.
It does look like a mohawk from the side.
I like his look. It's a nice look for a character.
He gets such a variety in body types and faces with making like four shapes. It's actually amazing. You know, you would never
like Taco Bell, right?
It's exactly right. As a matter of fact,
four ingredients make 18 different items.
I misordered Taco Bell just yesterday. Just yet.
And yet you did.
I loved it and just as much. Exactly. Because what difference could it possibly make?
New characters are very rare, precious things in Peanuts. And we've had One Joke Wonders who didn't last very long. And we'll see if Five gets beyond his name, because
it doesn't look promising, does it?
No.
You know, Schultz, I probably have said this before, but you know, Schultz has many times said he doesn't like the idea of just giving a character a funny name and having, but he does it again and again. I mean, Charlotte Braun is essentially that. Five and his upcoming sisters are that. Peppermint Patty, to a degree, is that.
Woodstock.
Woodstock, right, exactly. So he does do it. Sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't. It really depends on what is added beyond the name. And unfortunately for Pigpen, yeah. Unfortunately for poor Five, not much does. But he does appear in the famous Christmas special, in particular in the famous dance sequence. So Five and his upcoming sisters are immortal for that. And speaking of which, October 17th, two twin girls come up and talk to Lucy. They say, "Hi, big girl. My name is Three, and this is my sister. Her name is Four." The girl continues, "Our brother's name is Five. I believe you've already met him. Our last name is 95472. The little girl says, "Numbers, numbers, and more numbers." Then she says to Lucy, "Our dad gets upset easily lately. He says his head hurts."
Now, by the way, 95472 is a zip code for Sebastopol, California.
Amazing. That's very
cool. How does Schultz going to remember his zip code? He's going to name one of his characters with his zip code he'll never forget.
Brilliant.
Good research, Earl.
I did not know that. That's really cool.
Yeah. This was going around. I think this whole thing with lots of numbers, like zip codes, was kind of a fodder for comedians.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anything in particular, but I can see like Bob Newhart and kind of those guys who did like comedy albums talking about everything's like the number these days.
And it's interesting to me that Schultz couldn't bear to have the father name him and his kids numbers because he believed in it. He's doing it in protest of
right.
it, mm-hmm. which doesn't really make right. sense.
Well, no, because there is a joke where they say, no, this is his way of giving in. But that might, I don't know when that comes, if that's this year.
But they also say another place that he's against it. So it's like Schultz can't quite land the logic behind it. So he just plays up the absurdity.
Right.
Flows with it.
Right. Now, here's a famous strip. October 20th, Sally comes up to Charlie Brown, who's watching TV. Then she says to him, "Guess what?" Charlie Brown says, "What?" Sally looks around to see if the coast is clear. Then she motions for Charlie Brown to follow him. They go into another room. Then from that room, they go into another location. Then Sally looks out the window to make sure no one is paying attention to them. Then they sneak behind the couch on all fours. And Sally whispers to Charlie Brown, "We prayed in school today."
This is as topical as Schultz ever got.
Yeah, I mean, this is so... For reference, there were two major Supreme Court rulings, I think in 62 and 63, and Stephen Lind and his Charlie Brown Religion book kind of covers this, the story behind this. And so they were basically restricting in public schools the use of prayer that was led by, you know, authorities in the school. And it was that was kind of getting tightened down to keep a separation of, I guess, church and state is the term that most people have used. And it's interesting that there's this story that the guy who was kind of the go-to was a vice president of United Teacher was not comfortable with this, with Schultz. And when they started getting the letters in, he was even more uncomfortable. And they were coming from both sides of the issue. And that, again, we've talked about this before, is the genius of Schultz, is that he had people asking to can I reprint this to back up both sides of where these Supreme Court cases landed. And they ultimately decided they wouldn't let anybody reprint it because they didn't want to kind of come down or suggest that there was a side that Schultz was on. And actually Schultz he did write a letter to, I think it was a small publication called Vital Christianity. And Schultz wrote that, says, the fears that Chief Justice Achor, I think it's Achor, and others who have written in our weekly magazine concerning Supreme Court rulings against school prayers show a profound lack of faith. The success of our Lord's teaching and the survival of the early church was due to its holiness. It needed no government approval. If our spiritual lives need the support of governmental laws, then we are already doomed. The basic teachings of the book of Revelations is the triumph of God's true church in spite of all that goes on around it. Our faith must lie in the ability of the gospel to save the individual. The gospel does not need the law on its side. If God be with us, who can be against us? Sincerely, Charles M. Schultz. Well, it sounds like one of his Sunday rants that he gave his other characters, right. But he never put it in the strip, and he does leave it open-ended. You can read this however you want as to whether it, you know, it's appropriate in the strip itself, which I think is genius again, that he's able to touch on a topic that people were thinking about, but not really take a side that would divide his audience.
Oh, well, I have three things I want to say about this strip. The first is that years, decades later, Gary Groth asks him, Gary Groth, who is the publisher of Fantagraphics and also a publisher of the Comics Journal. So he's now the publisher of the complete Peanuts comics, but he at the time was interviewing Schultz for the Comics Journal. And he asked him about this strip, and Schultz basically said what Harold just said and still felt that way, saying, I'm against the idea even of prayer in school, because who's going to, his funny thing, he's like, well, I'm not Catholic. Who's going to lead it? A Catholic? And as someone who is Catholic, that's a smart choice. You don't want those people in charge. So he stayed with that. The second thing about this, though, is I used to not like this strip at all. And what it reminded me of was the Saturday Night Live skits about George Bush and George W. Bush, rather, and Al Gore. And the gist that they were going with for basically the whole season leading up to the 2000 election was there's no difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush. That was like the common wisdom in the world, like, oh, they're just different versions of the same thing, boring, boring, boring. And I always felt like, well, if you're gonna go ahead and make a political statement, have a point of view rather than just have some milquetoast nothing. Having gone through the strip with you guys, seeing it now I see the reason it doesn't come down on the side is because this is from Sally's point of view. That's all he's interested in, which is, we prayed in school today. This is making everybody upset, uptight. I don't even really know why, but I have to go to the one person I really trust and say something about this. And it's her brother, Charlie Brown. And I think for those reasons, now I think it's a great strip. I think it's a real emblem of what, like you say, what his genius is.
But it doesn't begin and end with Sally, because Charlie Brown doesn't have the blank stare like you would expect.
Yeah.
He's got his hands against his mouth, and he has these two little motion lines. Like, it's kind of this horror, like, oh my goodness. He's kind of in the line with her.
No. I think his horror is that he's a rule follower. He's not a rebel.
Oh, interesting.
So if they prayed in school, I don't think he's reacting to that. He's reacting to the fact that they did something they're not supposed to do.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. I mean, I don't think we're disagreeing there. I mean, he's got his own response, but it's not neutral.
Right. Yeah. He's not looking at Sally like, oh, what are you worked up about? He indicates that this is something that's controversial or whatever. October 22nd, Lucy is standing out in a field. Panel 2, we see Charlie Brown approaching her with a football helmet on and a football tucked under his arm. Lucy just smacks the heck out of Charlie Brown, sending him flying. Then Lucy looks out at us and says, I love touch football.
It's kind of a wimpy little hit, though, for Lucy. I mean, where's the slug?
Well, you know, I guess she's technically playing by the rules and just tagging him with the open palm, right?
Yeah, okay.
Although I think it's two-hand touch, so I think she's still wrong. Look. October 29th. Good old Linus is out in the pumpkin patch with our new pal, Five. Linus says to Five, he knows which kids have been good and which kids have been bad. Linus continues, and on Halloween night, the great pumpkin rises out of the pumpkin patch and flies through the air with his bag of toys for all the good children of the world. Linus looks at Five, who's thinking this over. Then Five says to Linus, how long has it been since you've had a physical checkup?
So Five gets a punchline.
Yeah, zinger no less.
But I think it has nothing to do with his personality. I think Schultz just needed somebody who didn't know about the Great Pumpkin before. So it had to be the new character.
Oh, yeah, right. So Linus could explain it. Right, right.
So how do you think of about this little nascent character compared to Shermie?
Well, Shermie would have known about the Great Pumpkin.
Would he?
So, yeah, this guy has no personality.
Oh, maybe not.
Well, yeah, I mean, Linus has been going on about this for like 5 years.
But Shermie seems like he's nowhere to be found for so much, unless he's playing baseball. So I guess Linus could be talking about the Great Pumpkin around the baseball field.
You know, in just regards to Shermie, I would like to say since we don't have really any Shermie strips this year, this is as good a place as any to check the Shermometer, because I'm afraid I have an update.
Let's check the Shermometer, Charlie Brown.
So here's the thing. In our special with Todd Webb, we added ombrophobic, which is fear of water, to Shermie's character traits. However, while I was putting some of my books back on the shelf, I came across some earlier strips where Shermie was indeed playing in the water. So, I know. So I'm afraid, if I can ask a unanimous consent, I think we have to strike ombrophobic from the Shermometer. What are our thoughts?
So be it. Do it.
Could we say he's evolvingly water sensitive?
No, because I want to sell this as a t-shirt someday. And that won't fit.
Oh, I see.
All right, so should we cross out ombrophobic or no?
I think we should cross out Shermie.
Oh, no. He's got 6 good years left. All right, but if we're crossing out ombrophobic, that reduces...
I can give him one for this year.
Oh, great, great. What is it?
Bystander.
Oh, he's a bystander. He's present. So if that's the case, and we cross out ombrophobic, we now have a character who is a bystanding, cynical, philosophical, history-loving, empathetic, aggressive, compassionate, patient, pedantic, knowledgeable, emotional, good-listening, vain, friendly, hypocrite.
What a guy.
Shermie, 1963.
And he went on to get his own strip.
With NEA. They always had those types of strips.
Yeah, right. December 8th, we see Linus's head floating amongst a variety of little chocolates, the kind you would find in a box of candies.
Russell Stover.
Right, Russell Stover, for example. Lucy comes up with the box and says, hey, you want a piece of candy? Linus looks in it and says, chocolates, eh? How nice. Let's see now. I must make sure I don't get one with coconut in it. I can't stand coconut. Let's see now. That one looks like a cream, but you never know. That one could be a caramel. There's no divinity, is there? That one's probably coconut. The light-colored ones are usually good, although the dark-colored ones are sometimes creams. I don't know about those square ones. I wonder if Lucy just loses it and screams, take one! Linus is sent flying, and then from his place on the floor, he selects one candy, which he then tastes and looks out at us and says, coconut. Again, the anti- coconut propaganda continues in Peanuts.
Yeah, that's a big, loud take one from Lucy. That's one of the largest largest letterings you'll ever see in a peanut strip.
It is. Looks
and good. She is not happy. And speaking of that, maybe we should do our anger index.
Let's do it.
Our happiness index.
Because we are coming up to the end of the year fast. So let's see where we are.
Yeah. So last year, for a recap, for those of you who have not listened before, for no particular reason, I've been going through each year's strips to see how many strips contain at least one incidence of a character being happy or one incidence of a character being angry. And just trying to see how that flows throughout the strip. Is it consistent? Does it make changes across the years? And anyway, last year we had 101 strips, or 28% of the strips showing the character showing anger, and we had 105, just four more, showing happiness. So where do you think we are this year compared to last year?
I think it's angrier.
I think it's less angry.
All right, I'm going to say it's 5% more angry.
I'm going to say you're mistaking for anger and frustration.
Oh, that could be. Harold, what is the answer?
So 101 last year, there are 85 this year. Michael is correct. 23% of the strips show anger, which I think is an all-time low.
Wow. First, I have to say, Michael, you nail this every time.
It's Michael knows his strips.
I have not gotten close once. I think the only time I got close was when I went Price is Right rolls.
And happiness. So 105 strips, slightly more than the anger strips in 1962. Are we up, down, or the same as last year?
Around the
Michael,
same.
What do you think?
Around the same.
Around the same. I agree with Michael. I thought about it a lot. And I agree with Michael.
You show great wisdom.
Yes.
96. So we're down just nine strips. 26% of the strips are showing happiness. So both are down. And that is the Peanuts I remember. The Peanuts, it was kind of even keel. You earned the happiness and you earned the displays of outrage and anger. When they happen, they seem to count more. That's my take of this year. Is that the characters are kind of settling into who they are. They're settling into being around each other. They still have those friction points and they still have those moments where they really connect. But when they connect, it's stronger than it's ever been.
They connect with their fists a lot.
See, I was going to say, it also applies to what we were talking about earlier with him eschewing the obvious gag. Because I think the obvious gag a lot of times maybe is a funny, happy joke or a mean, nasty put down or whatever. And he is moving into these other realms more and more each year. And we're at a real peak of that now, clearly.
Yeah. I think there's definitely something going on with Schultz where he's building these characters into just levels of relationships and there's subtlety to it. And it's like if he doesn't need to have a character happy, he's going to have them more neutral in their. He's done that all along, pretty much, but he's really holding back from that. It's almost like if you build up a tension, in the strip, and when there is no response, I see other strips where there's no response and the characters are just dull and dead. But it's here, it's almost like a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And you see it occasionally in the strips, like when Lucy is just going off about how terrible her life is. And then Linus says this kind word to her and she just explodes in tears. It's great. And Schultz has earned that by doing what he's doing with these characters and with the emotions and how he doesn't play something up with an emotion. He doesn't take the air out of the characters by constantly showing them angry or happy. You have to have a reason for it.
Yeah. Like when you see Charlie Brown push back against Lucy this year too, that has real release to it because you haven't seen him do it before.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I think all of that makes a lot of sense. December 18th, Linus looks forlorn and he's sitting in an easy chair in his living room. And he says to Charlie Brown, "Lucy volunteered me to sing Jingle Bells at the PTA Christmas program." Linus continues, "I can't sing in public. I'm a terrible singer. I never have been able to sing." Charlie Brown says to Linus, "Don't worry about it. In Psalm 98, we read, 'Make a joyful noise unto the Lord.'" Linus screams at Charlie Brown, "This is the PTA!" This whole sequence of Linus having to sing Jingle Bells, I also really related to, because we would have to do the Christmas pageant every year in grade school, and it was always a source of stress.
Yeah, and I think this trip gave me an irrational fear of PTAs up until my adult life.
That's not irrational. That's a well-placed fear. That brings us to the end of the year. What a great year. I really enjoyed this, and I enjoyed talking to you guys. So, Michael, as we come to the end of the year, we've had a couple characters. We've had some changes. Let's take a look at our possibly accidentally current and popular feature of the tier list. Has anything changed in your regard with these characters
in
1963?
Let's discuss it. And it won't be finalized until later.
All right.
Clearly, we've got some new characters who have to go in somewhere. So I guess you put them in the bottom and see if they can float up. Five seems to be a legit character. I'm not sure about this three and four.
Yeah, I don't they think look
like
what
they look like one shots to me. I don't know if they're worthy.
They do. They do appear again, but not in any real meaningful way, certainly. Except again in the Christmas special where they do the dance.
Yeah, I mean they're like walk-ons. So yeah, we're shuffling things around. I think we need to decide if Sally jumps to the top tier starring just because she's had three solo strips.
I don't think yet, but she's getting there. But I would say not yet.
Yeah, I'd wait too. The bunnies. I think since we ruled that Farron is not a real character yet, I think the minimum for a character has to be a thought balloon.
Well, no, because you have Miss Othmar.
I have to show some consciousness. I took out that whole tier of characters who we hear about but we never see.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I never listened to this podcast.
Yeah, you should. So I don't think Farron's a character, but he might become one, but until he shows some sign of consciousness.
Well, he's been not. Smug.
Yeah, it was just a smile.
He's been specifically smug, too. He's been specifically smug to somebody. Yeah,
I think a name is not enough. Well, leaving aside
the very important character of Farron, well, how about some of the other characters in this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Patty clearly has got a raw deal here.
Yeah.
And if I were her, I'd be really pissed. But I think he gave it all to Violet and all the nastiness, so...
Well, you know what? She had 13 years to develop a second personality trait, so I do not have...
No, Patty, she was like one of the first three characters, so it's kind of sad to see her degraded like this.
Yeah, Shermie and Patty, they're in deep trouble here.
Yeah, serious. Anyway, do you have strong feelings about anyone moving up or down? Otherwise, it's status quo.
I keep Sally... Maybe a little she's had some really good moments this year. And she did show up a fair amount, but I think she's well, would she be in Schroeder territory?
Yeah, they're at second level.
Yeah. That's where I put her.
Change is, I don't know exactly when the big change comes, but this is probably the status quo for a while, I think.
You know what's interesting when you talk about the top characters? It's Charlie Brown, Snoopy, Linus, and Lucy. And it's like John, Paul, George, and Ringo. It's always said in that order, right? You would never say like Lucy, Charlie Brown, Snoopy, and Linus. Right. It's always Charlie Brown, Snoopy, Linus, and Lucy.
That's interesting. Although I would put the bunnies in the top tier, but that's just my question.
The bunnies need their own Netflix show. Guys, I've had a lot of fun doing this year. This was one of my favorites. They're all my favorite. I know I say that every year, but it's also my favorite day of the week when I get to hang out with my pals and talk about my favorite comic strip. So if you want to continue this conversation, I want you to go visit us on our website, unpackingpeanuts.com. Drop us an email. Tell us what you like about the show. Tell us what you would like to see different, perhaps. Hey, and if you have any ideas for special episodes or anything like that, or things you'd want to see us cover, shoot us an email and let us know. If you're not an email person, if you're more one of these social media kids, if you're an influencer or whatever, you can hop on Instagram or Twitter and check us out at Unpack Peanuts. That's where we are there. And of course, on our website, that's where you can vote for Strip of the Year. And that's what brings us to the end of this episode. We have just our last two pieces of business. One, who is the MVP or most valuable peanut of 1963, and what is our picks for strip of the year? Michael, why don't you go first?
Boy, I don't know. Nobody really stands out this year. It's a real team effort. I guess I have to do it. I always give it to Linus, so I'll give it to Linus.
Linus coming in strong for another year. Harold, how about you for MVP?
I have to give it to Linus as well by a hair. I think second is Charlie Brown because he's there's a lot of great strips with Charlie Brown this year that cover quite a range, but I think Linus is just squeaking by.
I'm going to give it to Charlie Brown this year. I think this was my favorite year of Charlie Brown. This is where he really fully embodies the character that I know and love. So I'm going to give MVP to him. So now how about Strip of the Year? Michael.
Okay. I've narrowed it down to two, and I can't find the second one, so I have to give it to the first one. It's not a significant strip in any way, but I'm going for January 27th. Because I think the question about Snoopy getting cold and sleeping on the doghouse. And everyone Great thinks one. The only logical thing is so ridiculous. and they even convinced Linus that, I mean, it's an absurd strip, but it really sums up this world well.
It sure does. That's a great pick. Harold, how about you?
Well, this is an amazing year. We are at peak Peanuts, I think, as far as I'm concerned. And I was just thinking strips that we didn't even make it in that are absolute classics. Joe Slobotnick never shows up.
Right.
Charlie Brown trying to trade with Lucy. She accidentally gets a Joe Slobotnick trading card. And Charlie Brown wants it so badly, and he's offering everything. And then she just I think he's kind of cute. I got a cute smile. I want to keep him. And then Charlie Brown is absolutely devastated that she won't trade. And then she throws it in the trash in the final panel. It's like, oh, a classic. But that stuff is all through this year. There's just so many amazing strips. But I think the one that I will have to pick, your pick that you took right up front, Jimmy, I thought is a brilliant choice. But my choice is June 30th. It is probably the most connection between Linus and Lucy you're going to see in the entire strip of 50 years, where Lucy is complaining that she has nothing going for her. And Linus reminds her that she has a little brother who loves her. That strip just totally, it took years to get there, and it took years to earn that strip. And I'm just so grateful for it.
Fantastic pick as well. And yes, I'm going with February 3rd. I'm aware of my tongue. That always makes me really laugh. And yes, with all the stuff we didn't mention, we talked about it off mic, but also, this is the first year where Snoopy is confirmed to be a beagle. That was July, but we didn't mention it. And by the way, for the few friends of mine who do listen to this, or for people who you don't know me and email me, yes, I know that strip. And yes, we could have included it, because we cannot include them all, but they are all deserving of it, because it's just a masterwork. So please come back next week, where we're going to be discussing 1964. We'll see if Charles Schulz can keep up this level of greatness. I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say he can. But we'll find out next week. Until then, for Michael and Harold, I'm Jimmy. Be of good cheer.
Yes, be of good cheer. Yes,
be of good cheer.
Unpacking Peanuts is copyright Jimmy Gownley, Michael Cohen, and Harold Buchholz. Produced and edited by Liz Sumner. Music by Michael Cohen. Additional voiceover by Aziza Shakrala Clark. For more from the show, follow Unpack Peanuts on Instagram and Twitter. For more about Jimmy, Michael, and Harold, visit unpackingpeanuts.com. Have a wonderful day, and thanks for listening.
Twas ever thus.